Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of Impact Vest, and along with our guest host, we aim to inspire and motivate towards collective positive global impact to solve our world's most pressing challenges in sustainability. With each episode, we will engage in insightful conversations with global changemakers, visionaries, and sustainability activists who wish to build a more sustainable and resilient future. Join us now as we create the future of impact.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Impact Vest podcast. I'm Barbara Kuntz, the head of sponsorships and events at Impact Vest. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Obet Aparicio, who's the chief operating and financial officer of Hispanic Social Assembly. Welcome to our podcast, Obet.
Hello, Barbara. Thank you for having me.
So talk to us a little bit about the Hispanic Social Assembly.
Of course. So Hispanic Social Assembly, it started out over 40 years ago. It's been 40 years in the making. By our founder, Alejandro Suarez, primarily what the Hispanic Social Assembly, while Mr. Suarez was out doing philanthropy work throughout Latin America, he, in his endeavors, he noticed a massive exploitative, inhumane, and just rather cruel agriculture, trading, and business practices, you know, not practiced throughout all of Latin America, you know, from Mexico to Brazil. And he decided to address the situation by forming the Hispanic Social Assembly. And basically, you know, what people are saying are the agriculture and farmers, you know, the people that are feeding us can't even afford to feed themselves. And somewhere in that situation, Mr. Suarez decided to start the HSA. And primarily the goal is to make sure that people just get paid fairly for their wages, right? Who knew?
Wow, that's an amazing objective. So talk about your role in the Hispanic Social Assembly and how you became involved with this organization.
Of course. So primarily, I was a financial professional here in Virginia. I've had the pleasure of, through, you know, just meeting acquaintances and things along those lines. Primarily, my goal in Virginia was to start an education system for the Hispanic community, primarily because, you know, a lot of people come migrate from Latin America to the United States and have no understanding or may not have a full knowledge or full explanation of someone giving them the luxury of explaining, you know, what's a retirement account, what's an IRA, what are mutual funds, what are stocks, bonds, et cetera, right? Things that sound foreign, you know, breaking it down, explain to them what each product does, when it's more convenient, why it's important to save for retirement, and so on and so on. That eventually led me to meeting Mr. Suarez, who then, you know, looked at my talents, despite that fact that I'm the youngest one there. He saw how I was able to implement my financial background into the Hispanic Social Assembly. And he said, well, you know, I need a project manager. And I started as a project manager, but then he saw how efficient I was. And then he said, hey, you know, you could be my chief operating financial officer. And because, you know, just because of the returns you gave us, you know, we want to make sure that we, in the next sector, in the next 10, 20 years, you know, you may potentially be the next CEO when all of us are long gone from the organization. So yeah, that was primarily, you know, just the objective. It was a very beautiful transition, you know, from moving to helping people to moving to helping a lot more people.
That's amazing. And already he's got his succession plan in place. So you mentioned Virginia. Is this where the HSA is located?
That's where the headquarters is located, yes. Primarily just because Virginia has a lot of tax benefits for businesses, small and large. And primarily because of the importing capacity that it has, because we're in the center of the East Coast in the United States. So it's very easy for us to receive products and then distribute them to New York or Florida, because we're like right in the middle. So it just makes everything easy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you operate in every country in Latin and South America?
Yes, ma'am. From Mexico to Brazil, we have representatives in every country.
That's amazing. So tell us about your vision, mission, core values about the Hispanic Social Assembly.
Of course. So the vision is to essentially just have a great economic worth throughout Latin America, primarily because the need for migrating from Latin American countries, both legally and illegally, come from the lack of jobs there. And, you know, just being able to supplement their lifestyles or supplement their families. You know, a lot of people tend to misinterpret the fact that people leave their homeland for the United States and only because they want, you know, things like free benefits and things along those lines. And regrettably, that's not often the case. Often the case is, you know, a lot of people, you know, are saying permanently goodbye to their parents, right? I could never imagine saying goodbye to my mother and never being able to see her again, you know, because of legal circumstances, you know, and that's primarily it. That's the vision, is to just make sure people have the option to do whatever they would like to their life, right? I don't think that's too controversial. And of course, the mission is primarily to help starting with the agriculture system, is to, one, get rid of these inhumane work practices, as I mentioned. And then following that, we want to make sure we're tackling situations like human trafficking, child labor, inhumane work conditions, and things along those lines. And because, you know, the thing that we love about Latin America is that it is such an untapped natural resource. And the fact that we haven't even scratched the surface of what Latin America can do. We are looking to implement modern day practices because, you know, what do we have now that we didn't have 50 years ago, right? We have new technologies, we have new research. And, you know, I think a AI robot that can process 100 yards of agriculture goods is probably more efficient than, you know, a child who probably should be in school, right? And that's how you kind of give back to the community. The core values of ours was just to form a ethic work environment for everyone who is willing to work with us. You know, one of the things that we always tell people is there's a running joke, right? Because 70% of the agriculture in Latin America represents inhumane work conditions, child labor, etc. So we always say, oh, you can only eat 30% of your food if it comes from Latin America. So that's kind of just the way we want to work, you know. And that's it, really. You know, it's just making sure people get paid fairly. You know, that's basically the best we can hope for at this point.
Yes. And so one of your core values that caught my eye said fostering sustainable development. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Of course. So fostering sustainable development is essentially creating microeconomies in these, you know, these communities where these agriculture folks are coming from. You know, because primarily we said, hey, you know, we look at their acres, their properties, and we say, hey, you know, how much do you own? And they'll say, oh, man, I would love to be able to build quality homes around the corner. But, you know, I just don't have that kind of resource because I'm barely getting by. So what we mean by that is, you know, we want to go to these small towns, these small municipals, and say, hey, you know, we have partners who are willing to provide clean energy. We're willing to provide clean drinking water and build up the infrastructure or repair the current infrastructure. And by doing that, you know, we've seen that, you know, people tend to stay where they have planted their roots. And it's been a great thing to see in real time. You know, in Guatemala, you know, to be able to see a one of our coffee growers, you know, have the resources to grow humanely, and then see them buy real estate and buy properties and then sell those properties right back to the community. And then, you know, partnering with green energy folks, solar energy, nuclear, gas, et cetera, and watch these towns just build themselves, right? It's magnificent. And that's what we mean, right? Building livable and especially, you know, attainable living standards.
Yes. Wow. It's like a 360 degree investment in these communities. So talk about other projects you've got working, because I noticed that when I read about the HSA, there's dozens and dozens all over Central and South America. So what else besides the coffee one in Guatemala?
Well, for right now, the main thing besides the coffee in Guatemala, I would have to say right now we're actually making a big case for, one, how exactly the whole human trafficking system is working, right? How it operates, what is its origins? For example, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I'm from Mexico in particular, right? So this is where it comes a little close to home. So, you know, there's a big situation with the cartel. There's a big situation with the fentanyl smuggling to America, to the United States. And regardless, you know, you see the impact in real time, right? Because as much as, it pains my heart, you know, when we speak to people from, you know, these organizations from the cartels, they say, well, if I had a job, I wouldn't have to do this. If I had a way to provide for my family, I wouldn't do this. If I could go to school, I wouldn't do this, right? So it kind of breaks your heart in both situations. And we want to start addressing the fentanyl crisis. That's primarily it, right? Because if it hurts, you know, internally, because you see the pain that it causes, you know, people you love, you know, and, you know, then the very thing about that is that has no bound, that has no border to us, right? And we understand the need, but that doesn't justify the means. And we, you know, we decided, okay, well, now our big thing is we want to start bringing that to light, right? We want to start addressing, you know, why it's so important for the HSA to grow or for similar organizations to follow suit, because, you know, if we don't, we're going to implode. You know, regrettably, as much as I hate to say that, you know, we will implode indefinitely, and we want to avoid that sort of situation at all times. So that's primarily it. It's just fighting for those who, you know, that lost loved ones in both Latin America to the cartels, and loved ones here in the United States as well. So that would say that's the next big thing.
Wow. And so where do you think you've made some inroads already? And what do you see as some key challenges with this?
Well, right now if the fentanyl crisis could be addressed, you know, I'm pretty sure somebody would have done it, but it's definitely challenging. It's more challenging than originally anticipated, but primarily we've made headway with just speaking to people on the ground, right? You know, a lot of people tend to hear their narratives from the news, and that's all they receive, right? But they never get the chance to speak one-on-one with individuals who are actually both handling and processing things. And the thing that, you know, we want to bring to light is that, you know, these are people who are just looking for something to who are in need. Does that justify what they're doing? Of course not. You know, we've made that very clear that just doesn't justify pushing millions of pounds of fentanyl that are killing hundreds of thousands of people each year in the United States. And at the same time, you know, the biggest challenges to that is, I would have to say, it's just people don't like when, or I should say, major organizations, corporations, special interests, they don't like changes, right? And what I mean by that is, once, you know, there's been a culture devised around it where, you know, say big corporations are used to going to Colombia or Guatemala and saying, we're going to buy this product at the lowest price possible. And, you know, we don't care if you eat or not. We don't care if you use child labor or not. We want the product at the end of the day. It's all about numbers. So it's been challenging because, one, you have a lot of blockade, right? Because a lot of I've been barred from saying specific names and calling out specific individuals, but there are major corporations that are present that are continuously doing things that they know are illegal, right? They get called out on it. They've been called on it before. But regrettably, they're also learning, right? So what's the best thing for major corporations who have all the resources to do? Buy out all the news media outlets, buy the local journalists, buy out the local, you know, news and ways of transmitting information, right? Because you do that, then no one's going to know that, you know, little Jose over in Chihuahua, you know, his family's potato farm has been ravaged by coyotes. And, you know, then because if you start bringing that to light, you know, that's just kind of the biggest challenges is the fact that we have people who have more wealth than us. They're just using those means to keep everyone quiet. And getting people to talk is probably the hardest thing.
As you said earlier, I bet you didn't imagine at the beginning how big of a challenge this was going to be, but it's so commendable that you're going after it. So what are your goals in the next 3 to 5 years, Obet?
The next 3 to 5 years is, of course, to just start building more alliances worldwide, you know, not just with the United States, but, you know, we have great folks over from the UAE. We have folks from Europe. We have folks from a variety of different places throughout the world saying, hey, you know, we have the funds, we have the means, you have the resources. Why don't we collaborate, right? There's been a lot of great people over from the UAE who have seen the HSA and how they operate, and they're super interested in being involved, right? And I suppose for the next 3 to 5 years, our goal is to just say, hey, you know, we're going to reinforce our growers, our agriculture ecosystem, and then look for clients worldwide to just, you know, start feeding people, right, with inexpensive non-brand food that they know has been humanely sourced and humanely processed.
So in closing, Obet, what message would you like to leave with our listening audience?
So with the message, you know, I would like to leave the audience is just that, you know, when you're presented with hardships, you know, when it seems like just because we are from different parts of the world, that doesn't mean we're not all human. In the end, you know, we all want the same thing. We all want to be able to provide for our loved ones. We all want to be able to drink water and eat healthy food. That is the thing that unites us, right? We're all united by hunger, and we always invite people to come meet with the Hispanic Social Assembly because we believe that relating to what we have in common will ultimately lead to us building bridges and not walls.
Thank you, Obet, for joining us today. It has been a real pleasure talking with you. The work you and the Hispanic Social Assembly are doing in the Americas, it's truly inspiring and it's making a real difference in the world. So thank you again.
I appreciate it. Thank you, folks, because, you know, speaking to like-minded folks like yourselves is just how we, you know, we show people that it can be done. You know, it can be profitable, but it doesn't have to cost us our humanity.
Well said.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the ImpactVest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. Join us next week for another episode and become part of our ImpactVest newsletter community, where you will receive all of the latest updates about our work in this new era of innovative impact finance. See you next week as we create the future of finance at ImpactVest.